Hey everyone, welcome to Garden Fork Radio. You're here with Rick and Eric. Good morning, sir.
I'm your special guest, Eric. It's been a very long time.
Well, you've been on the road. Man with a Prius driving halfway across the country.
Yeah, twice. I've been doing a lot of canine rescue work this spring and early summer. Drove from Virginia Beach to Chicago, picking up and dropping off rescues and moving them around, and brought back a rescue pup of my own, Mr. Darcy. And then turned right around about a month later, a few weeks later, and ran out to Kentucky from Virginia Beach, Lexington, doing the same thing, reshuffling between foster homes and new owners and whatnot, picking up little rescues and bringing them, taking them out and bringing some back into this area, and brought back another dog for us. And her name is Bhutan. They're both little terrier mixes of a sort. Bhutan is French for button, and that's kind of what we call her around the house, is Button. She's a little female mixed terrier. She Who Must Be Obeyed is a big fan of the Outlander series, and there's a terrier in the series named Bhutan, and so that's what we've named her.
All right, cool. So how do you, by the way, everyone, if this is your first time in the Garden Fork, it's a very eclectic DIY podcast. And today we're talking about dog rescue of all things. Well, we're going to get into some other stuff as well. But so how do you know to go to Chicago to go get a dog?
Oh, there are rescue groups all over. If you have a special interest in terriers, Karen Terriers, Wheatons, Labradors, German Shepherds, Greyhound Rescue is an enormous operation. All these people are tied together on the internet. They're tied together on Facebook. Everyone has a Facebook page. And there are certain people like myself that have a fair amount of free time and a willingness to drive dogs around the country. In fact, even private pilots or commercial, or not really commercial pilots, but you know, the twin engine mail plane kind of things, will take on caged animals, dogs, and fly them from place to place to place. My Darcy was actually in a rescue shelter down in Houston, and a pilot flew him from Houston to Chicago and to get him out of that area up to a place where there was a foster home for him. And so everyone is kind of related. And when one foster group spots has a specialty, in our case, a West Highland Terrier, a Westie Terrier rescue group, spotted Darcy and said, "He looks kind of like a Karen. Do you want him?" We say, "Yeah, go ahead and pull him out of the shelter." He was in a kill shelter down in Houston. They pulled him out for us, flew him up to Houston or to Chicago, and we put him in foster up there. I decided I wanted him, and then I called several different rescue groups in the area, said, "I'm going to Chicago. Do you have anything for me to take up there or bring back?" And so we all help each other out that way.
Wow, that's great. There's actually, there's at least one Garden Fork listener who is a pilot who has flown some rescue pups. I'm blanking on his name right now, but you know, I get emails from people, which is always really cool. It's radio@gardenfork.tv, by the way, is the email address. So, well, cool. So you have a Prius, right?
I have a Prius. So yeah, it doesn't cost me much, and it's pretty easy. In fact, one night instead of trying to find a hotel with four dogs, I just slept in an RV park. I had a little pup tent. It's a pun, pup tent. And they slept in their kennels, and I slept in the pup tent, and then got an early start the next morning. So, you know, we just kind of rough it and keep on going and move these dogs around as best we can whenever there's an opportunity.
This is totally on a tangent, but did you know that you can go camping in New York City?
No.
I go surf casting out on the Rockaways, and that is part of the Jamaica Bay Wildlife Refuge. And across the bay from that is Floyd Bennett Field, which is a decommissioned Army airport.
I remember that.
And a bunch of stuff goes on there. Cycling races, there's sports camps there, and they have campgrounds, and there's RV camping and there's tent camping, and you can sign up for it. I'm pretty sure the reservation system is online. I'm going to go check it out because it's right near where I go fishing, and I went to buy my parking permit the other day, and they handed me this brochure about camping, and I was like, so if you wanted to come to New York, you could actually camp. You could spend the day in tourists doing touristy things throughout the five boroughs and then come back to a campground and spend the night.
Yeah, now here's a little piece of history. During World War II, a B-25 in the fog struck the Empire State Building.
Yes.
And it was headed for Bennett Field.
Yes, it hit, and it did not take the building down, a little different than 9/11, but yeah.
Yeah, one of the engines actually went down the one of the elevator shafts, but it didn't take it down. But he was turning around in the fog, trying to find the field, and ran smack dab into the Empire State Building instead.
Ooh. Well, it's a place full of history. There's actually one of the hangars has a group that restores vintage military aircraft. So it's pretty cool out there. So it's Floyd Bennett Field is part of the Jamaica Bay Wildlife Area out near the Rockaways. It's part of New York.
During a brief period, during a more flush time in my life when I was younger, I used to be a colonel in the Confederate Air Force. And we had down in Harlingen, Texas, very far tip of Texas, we had maybe about 150, 160 restored World War II aircraft that we flew. And the Confederate Air Force Air Show was a major event every year in South Texas.
I actually remember that. Wow, that's how old I am.
Yeah, but I got to the point where I couldn't afford it anymore. So, but it was great. And, the planes, of course, were all over the United States. And then they come down to Harlingen. Then later they moved up to, I think, Abilene or someplace a little farther north. But it's a great show. About the only place you can see just a huge collection of some of that World War II hardware that's still flying.
Huh. Who knew?
It's a wonderful thing.
So off to another tangent, but this is something actually we wanted to talk about on our topic thing. But the Guardian newspaper, which I actually know two people that work for that. It's based in the UK. There's an article about wasted food in the United States.
Oh, I don't know how we're going to get away with this forever. But half of all food produced in the United States is thrown away. And so much of it is thrown away, according to this article, just because it doesn't look good. It's not perfect. It's not a perfect apple. It's not a perfect orange. The watermelon is a little funny shaped. Even the clusters of grapes are not that inverted pyramid, and so they're not any good anymore. And we've got to stop that. That's just it's foolish and wasteful. I know my farmer's market has an ugly fruit bin. Mm-hmm. And, it's a little cheaper over there. And that's where I shop when I go to the farmer's market to get that out of the system and into my system.
In the corner of, well, at least most of the grocery stores I go to, maybe back where the bathrooms are or something, there is a couple of rolling racks, usually of shrink-wrapped produce that might have a couple nicks in it or something and is at least half price.
Yeah.
And it's already barcoded. And it's weird because I'll see other people over there, and I don't know, maybe they look like they're kind of guilt, they feel a little guilty about it. I go over there and I buy. I'm like, these peppers are perfect, I just don't get it.
I don't either. With the, just think of, somebody wrote me a note when I put this on Facebook, and they said, just think about how much water, and a lot of this fruit they're talking about and vegetables comes out of the Imperial Valley down in California, where they're having a real water crisis anyway. Think about how much water is embedded in that fruit and vegetables that's just kind of going to waste. And so, that's a terrible thing.
Yeah, the problem here is, okay, so first we have the thing where people want beautiful vegetables, But the other part of that is, well, why can't we take that damaged fruit or unpretty fruit and do something with it, is logistics. There's a price, there's a certain price point that the farmer has to hit to be able to afford to transport that the fruit. And there's a group in New York City that I worked with called City Harvest, and their whole thing is not feeding people with food that they've bought. They're feeding people that need food by transporting food from where it's not needed to where it is needed. So restaurants that have too much bread, or a wholesaler that has too many watermelons, too many cucumbers. City Harvest is basically a nonprofit trucking charity, and they drive across the city and they pick up food and they take it to where it's needed. And that kind of thing is also done on a larger scale with a couple of trucking companies I know. But that's the biggest part of this, is logistics of getting the food from where it is to where it's needed.
Right. And, you know, there's even, as an individual, something each of us can do. Have you heard of Grow a Row for your food bank?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, I do that. I have a row of peppers and two tomato bushes out here that I have designated for my food bank. And as they come up, I'll harvest them, and I'll be taking those down to the food bank, plus anything that any surplus that that we can't eat it from the other bushes. So that, you know, that's something to do. Also, just thinking about the waste that comes off from culling, you know, the leaves and the trimming and that kind of stuff. You're involved with a group that advertises with you that takes that waste and turns it into another product, right?
Ooh, nice segue, Rick.
I tell you, I'm good.
Best co-host ever. Yeah, actually, I've done some work with a Garden Fork sponsor called Echo Scraps. We have two videos out about products they make, but they, and I get pitched every day with someone that wants me to make a video about their product, and I most of the time say no. But what these guys do is they take food from restaurants and grocery stores that is otherwise going to be thrown away, and they divert it into local composting operations, and then they bag it and sell it. And one of the things they make is a compost accelerator, which is heavily nitrogen. It's basically vegetable, it's basically pelletized nitrogen in some form or another from food waste. And the other one we did was a really nice potting soil. So there are ways to divert it. It just, there has to be, because we live in a capitalist society, there's got to be a profit incentive, and these guys are working on that. So it's ecoscraps.com. Pretty interesting.
And, you know, you can do yourself the same thing if you just take a little bit of initiative and you have a little bit of time and space. But if you don't, EcoScraps is a great way to go. But I'd encourage everybody to take a look at this article in The Guardian. We'll post a link to it on the in the show notes.
Yeah.
And just look at the pictures. They are absolutely heartbreaking.
There's
this also.
You can buy Echo Scraps at Lowe's, by the way.
Oh, can you?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
At the blue store.
Yeah, because I need a little additional. My tomatoes. Let's talk a little bit about gardening, real gardening this time. You remember I had been having that late blight problem in my tomatoes. And I said, this time I'm going to do it differently. I'm going to prepare my ground. I'm going to put row cover down.
Right.
I'm going to put my tomato stakes through the row cover. I burned a hole with a butane torch and planted my tomatoes in that hole. And then I put the drip irrigation on top. And the whole idea was to keep the tomato leaves or any water from splashing up from the ground and onto the tomato plant, because all the fungus and the disease is in the ground and it splashes up onto the tomatoes. So far, it is working beautifully. I had the finest looking tomatoes I have ever had in my life.
Yay.
Yay. So we'll see how long they last, but they're the great looking tomatoes.
There's a book out there called The $65 Tomato, where this guy grows tomatoes in his backyard and he documents how much it cost just to produce some tomatoes.
But, you know, there is something humanizing about, and you know, just growing your own food, even if it's just a single tomato in a planter on your patio somewhere. there is something about growing tomatoes or something to eat, growing your own food. It's wonderful.
Hey, if you would consider supporting Garden Fork, one easy way to do it is by shopping at Amazon. There are links on each GardenFork.tv website page. It's usually on the right-hand side or at the top of the page. Or in the description of this podcast episode, there'll be an Amazon link as well. Click on that, do your shopping, and we get a little finder's fee from Amazon. All right? That'd be great. Thank you. So another segue into another sponsor in gardening, Troy-Bilt is our big Garden Fork sponsor, and they recently sent me their new rototiller that Rick was curious about, so I thought we'd talk a little bit about it. There'll be a video coming out soon about that.
I am desperate to see this video. This is the one that has the twin vertical tines, right?
It's like an egg beater or a cake mixer, an electric mixer that has the two rotary things that kind of interweave, you know, like a handheld mixer for your kitchen. So yeah, because most rototillers have these tines that are horizontal, and they're a bear to run through soil, especially soil that used to be a yard. You know, it's a yard, and you're like, oh, I'm going to rototill the yard, make it a garden. That is an incredible pain. And this has two tines that go up and down rather than side to side. So it's kind of like a food processor, a dual-tined food processor. And it's quite good. We tilled up a buddy of mine's yard. He had some grass and he wanted to turn it into a garden. And
good for him.
Yeah, it doesn't like rocks, but most rototillers don't like rocks. So it just blew through it. And it is, the rototiller can wreck your back, and this thing you can just kind of stand behind it and say, okay, go, and boom. So not an inexpensive machine, but if you are into rototilling and you need a good machine, this is a one to consider.
Yeah, I have seen, I've never used a big rototiller, but I have seen people dragged around the yard. I mean, they wear these body harnesses and essentially use the human as some sort of drag weight to keep it from running across the yard without them. I mean, it's like a mule dragging you across the yard.
Yeah, you won't have that with this.
Oh, wow. How does it propel itself forward then?
It has two drive wheels.
Oh, it uses the wheels, not the tines to drag itself forward.
Yeah. Yeah, my biggest issue with it is there isn't a faster speed on the wheels. So when you're just driving around the yard to get to where you're going to till, it doesn't go any faster. It just is like, brrr, it's like turtle speed.
Yeah.
But you can just turn it off and you can push it fairly easily. So
do you know Gretchen Rubin? Have you heard of her?
Yeah.
The writer did several books on happiness and whatnot. I have just the remedy for you. She says she every week she does this podcast. I think it's just called Happiness. But she says, I have learned to turn everything into a meditation. So when she goes and waits in line, she says, this is my waiting in line meditation. If traffic is stuck, she says, this is my traffic meditation. And so you can say, this is my walking behind the tiller meditation. It's a walking meditation, see? So see how that works?
Yes, I think that's fine. I'm just letting people know what to expect with their tiller when they buy one.
Well, but if it doesn't drag you all over the yard, how deep does it go?
It'll go about 6 inches on a pass.
Yeah. And how do you can you make it less than 6 inches? Is it can you control that somehow?
No.
Okay.
But well, I don't think you'd want to till any shallower than that anyway. So.
Yeah, I guess not. I was just kind of thinking about it. Huh. Well, yeah, because when you do a regular tiller, the tine is about 6 inches long till you get to the axle anyway.
Yep.
Yep.
It's a nice machine.
Oh, I'm desperate to see you do a video about it.
All right. Well, then you'll be satiated pretty soon. So.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent.
I'm finally installing the kitchen island in my Brooklyn apartment, and it has taken much, much longer than I thought it would. But we're close to the end.
You should probably get somebody that's handy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the hardest part has been getting hot water, wastewater, and electricity into up through the middle of the kitchen floor, because the island is, you know, in the middle of the kitchen, and the dishwasher is in the kitchen island because there's no room in the against the back wall of cabinets for the dishwasher. So I put it there, and I have a finished ceiling in the basement. So I've had to carve a number of large holes in the basement ceiling, which I'm going to have to fix. But just when you're working with a 110-year-old building, just the plumbing, the plumbing's been modified 110 times, you know?
Yeah, okay. So,
but wow. I fired up the dishwasher the other night, and hot water came into the dishwasher, and worked quite well.
Did you? Is it just a dishwasher, or did you put a sink in the center island as well?
No, the sink is behind me. It's a butcher block top, and I do not like sinks on butcher block because I find that they mold basically.
Yeah,
the sink doesn't, but the wood around any kind of sink molds. It's really hard.
You know, I've always been torn. Now, we didn't have room to put in an island when we remodeled the kitchen, but I've always been torn between wanting a sink in the very center of the island, and so that you could just, like, two or three people could sit around the island and do whatever needed to be done, prep for the meal, or having a gas range top in the center of the island and cooking in the center of the island and preparing around the edges. I never could decide which I'd like better.
Well, a segue on that is I'm working on the idea of an outdoor propane-powered cooktop, because I've realized I have a gas grill in Brooklyn here in my backyard, and I almost never use it. It has a side burner, but the side burner is broken, and I can't figure out how to fix it. So I thought, you know, I don't really grill a lot, but I don't want to cook inside because it heats up the house too much.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm thinking of finding on Craigslist or at a yard sale the propane cooktop out of an RV camper,
mm-hmm.
and building a metal frame. I just bought an arc welder. I'm learning how to weld slowly. And build like a metal cooktop with a propane tank underneath on some wheels with some butcher block little counter on each side of it. And I could cook outside in the backyard in the summer, and I would cook more food. And I wouldn't heat up my kitchen. So that's my plan. And it looks like I can get them on Craigslist for like $50. People are like parting out an RV. But it's literally, with the right piping, you have to redo some of the piping from the cook stove. But they're built for a 20-pound propane tank.
Okay. So, wow, that'd be interesting. Of course, right now it's so miserable outside. You know, today, the heat index here is going to be 107.
Yeah, it's going to be hot here as well.
It's miserable outside.
But at the end of the day, I'm happy to go out and cook because I'm not filling up my apartment with hot air and, you know.
Well, at the end of the day, we'll just eat a salad.
Yeah.
Throw a little bit of canned tuna on top of it or something.
Yeah.
But I'll fool the dogs today. They think they're going to go for a walk. Instead, they're going to go for a ride in the car. And as far as they're concerned, they've been on a walk.
Hey, I just noticed on the Garden Fork Facebook group, not the page, the Facebook group, we are about 12 people away from 1,000 members.
I was going to mention that. It has been a really fast-growing group.
And really a bunch active. Of nice people.
Yeah. Yeah, people have been, helpful and fun to be with, and people have been identifying bugs. There's that one bug I'm still not sure about. I need to.
It's a West Coast bug. So
West Coast bug. Okay, stay over there, West Coast bug.
There have been some spammers that have slipped through. That's a big problem on Facebook. It's a big problem with public groups, but we made it a closed group, so you have to ask to join. And Rick and I actually look at each person's profile that wants to join. And if a person has like very few friends or a very odd sounding name that looks like it's generated by a bot, we do not allow them to join. But it's been interesting. We've been able to keep the spam down. In some other groups I'm in, the spam is really a problem.
Oh, yeah. So if you'd like to join and... It would really help us if you would put some basic information in your profile about, you know, where you live, where you work, something like that. those are always really suspicious to us when they have just two or three pictures and then they're members of 70 or 80 groups and no other post. And we're looking at them and we say, well, gee, I just don't know.
Right.
If there's some personal information and, you know, some links and friends and that kind of stuff, at least we have some idea that and particularly if they're Garden Fork related kinds of links, you know, dogs, gardening, bees, that kind of thing.
Or email us and say, hey, I don't, everything is private, but here's my name. It's radio@gardenfork.tv. What the spammers do is they create a profile and then they don't start spamming right away. They start joining groups and they join a ton of groups so they look like they're legitimate. And then they spam all at once. And then they shut down that account and they start another. They're creating hundreds of them at a time. So,
And if you haven't, if you somehow didn't get approved and you thought you should be, email us and let us know because we were suspicious and just didn't approve you. And we'll be glad to correct that. But, and if you see something that's not right, report it. There's a button there on every post.
In the upper right-hand corner of the post is a little gray down arrow.
Yeah, and report it. It goes directly to the two of us. And actually, we've added two or three more people to help keep an eye on that. And we'll take care of it as soon as we can. We had one that went for a long time because it was a weekend and we were both away. And it just happens. We don't leave those things up on purpose.
Yeah, so that's great. So that's the Facebook group. The Facebook page is open, but it's if you like the page, you can't really post anything to it. But the Facebook group is great because it's like a forum. It's like a discussion forum. And people have had questions about, you know, yesterday was like, what is this bug? Is it a squash bug? I can't tell. And a couple of people tried to help. I think they did answer it, actually. Someone asked about rain barrels, so I pinged Scott Gillespie, who's a Garden Fork fan and a patron, by the way, and he helped out with that. So that's just kind of cool that way.
You bet. And what is the name of the group, in case people aren't sure?
It's called Garden Fork DIY Q&A. If you just type in Garden Fork into the Facebook search engine, it will show up as one of the things. So there you go.
Okay. Well, the dogs are barking to go on a walk, which means they're going on a ride, and I got to get out of here, my friend.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, everyone. Any thoughts or questions or comments, radio@gardenfork.tv.
And I think I'll be around for a while, and I'll try to be more regular, and thanks for letting me back on. By the way, you've had some great guests in my absence, so it's been good to hear some other voices.
Yay, cool. Thank you, sir.
Okay, talk to you later, my friend.
All right, see you. Hey, everyone, real quick, if you do us a favor, go to your computer, log on to iTunes, and write a review, a 5-star review, hopefully, of Garden Fork Radio. If you would use words like DIY, food, podcast, cooking, gardening, that'd be cool too, right? So go to iTunes, say nice things about us. That'll really help us in the search on iTunes so more people can find Garden Fork and listen to cool stuff. Thanks. Garden Fork's theme music is used under license from UniqueTracks.com.